Well, at the moment, abortion law is governed by a number of pieces of legislation. So you have the Offences Against the Person Act from 1861 and then the Infant Life Preservation Act from 1929. And both of these make abortion a statutory crime. And then they are modified by the Abortion Act 1967 with part of the HFEA Act in, I think, 1990. So basically that provides exemptions to the crime of abortion. So there are currently several grounds on which you can perform an abortion, such as risk to the life of the mother, or things like a risk to her mental health or physical health. Or you can also have an abortion up to term for life, the risk of life to the mother, or for risk of serious abnormality in the baby.
Now, the BMA put forward a motion to decriminalise abortion. The result is in. They have voted in favour of campaigning for abortion on demand with no upper limit. You know, obviously, this is not every medical professional voting on this. But what happens now? And do you think this will be passed in Parliament?
Well, what this does is change the policy of the British Medical Association. So people who were actually voting on this motion is around 270, 280, that sort of numbers. And we debate various motions that are brought forward by various parts of the organisation. So for this particular one, there was a local division in London that put forward a motion to decriminalise abortion. And then this was put together by the Ethics Committee and modified slightly. They put out various briefing papers to give background information to members before they voted. And then they voted on various aspects of it. But the main thing now is that the vote today has established that BMA policy now is to decriminalise abortion up to term. So there is no time limit on that. There was an option in the vote to restrict it to what's known as viability, and that has a specific legal reference in the Infant Life Preservation Act from 1929 of 28 weeks, although most people, the Abortion Act sets the limits for most abortions at 24 weeks. So there's a little bit of debate around what that term viability would mean in practice. But now BMA policy is in favour of decriminalising abortion. So what that will mean is when other people campaign in Parliament to bring forward, say, a private member's bill to decriminalise abortion, those people who are bringing that forward and supporting it will now be able to say, look, the BMA supports us in this. So it adds weight to any moves in Parliament to decriminalise abortion, because the BMA is often listened to carefully on areas of medical ethics.
And this is despite the fact that over 1,000 doctors and medical students have signed an open letter urging the British Medical Association to reject the motion. And just under 21,000 members of the public have also signed a similar petition. So although we've seen these results, the battle isn't completely over just yet.
Not at all. And I think that there's obvious opposition to decriminalisation from various sectors of the public. And obviously, most Christians will be against that, and many other people of different faiths and none who take a different view to that. The BMA does tend to be quite liberal and left-wing in terms of its politics, and one of the things that's a particular characteristic is there's a very, very strong emphasis within the BMA put on a woman's right to choose an abortion. And you know, that is balanced in the current Abortion Act. It's balanced with the rights or respect given to the unborn baby as it develops, so that in a later term there's more emphasis given on the developing baby, whereas within the BMA that is often minimised. And so the woman's right to choose is the overriding principle that many of the members go by, and that's often reflected in the votes.
If decriminalisation of abortion was to be passed in legislation, it could mean easier access to abortion, and it would also fuel sex selection abortion.
Yes, that's right. And that was a major feature of the debate today, because although the Abortion Act or the existing criminal legislation doesn't make any specific reference to the sex of the baby. We know that in several sectors of society, for instance, certain ethnic or religious communities, there is a pressure to have male children, and therefore there can be pressure to abort female children. And it never ceases to amaze me that, for instance, the BMA is adamantly opposed to the practice of female genital mutilation, and that they would campaign heavily for the criminalization of doctors who perform FGM, morally and ethically, in the opinion of the BMA members who were voting, because there seems to be a really, I think, a blinkered approach to that, that the woman's right to choose has to be overriding 100% of it. I mean, abortion is put across as a feminist issue where, women have to be given the right to choose, and yet there is the problem of killing female fetuses simply because they're female, and that to me seems a massive disparity.
Now, we know that two Australian states and Canada have also adopted this motion to decriminalise abortion. Can you tell us what impact this has had in those countries so far?
Sure. I mean, from what I know, one of the problems in Canada, I think, is that because it's decriminalised, therefore there is little impetus to collect good data on what is actually happening, and that's one of the fears that we would have within the UK. So, when Canada decriminalised abortion, the data that's available suggests that there is a 40% decrease in abortions happening in Canada. Clearly, that's not the case. I think that simply reflects the fact that people are not recording them. And within certain sectors of the Canadian public or Canadian communities, like those ethnic and religious communities that I mentioned, who would favour a male baby over a female one, there is now a documented 8 to 10% imbalance, with 8 to 10% more male children than female because of the practice of female foeticide. And the Canadian Medical Journal has put on record that Canada is a haven for parents who want to abort their female children in preference of males. So that's one issue. I think one of the big messages of decriminalising abortion is it doesn't really matter. I mean, there was lots of debate at the BMA about how decriminalisation doesn't mean deregulation, and that's true, but removing it from the criminal law basically says it's not as important. There's lots of worries about criminalising women who go for abortions, despite the fact that virtually no women are prosecuted for abortions in this country. It's virtually nil. You mentioned the issue about Australia as well, and only two states in Australia have voted to decriminalise abortion. There are various concerns that have been expressed about a rise in later abortions, say, beyond 24 weeks, and I don't have a full enough grasp of the data to say whether that's a true reflection or not, but certainly there are some concerns about that that are raised. And again, if you take abortion out of the criminal law, then there's less of an impetus to act before any kind of time limit is imposed. And whereas in the UK we have that 24-week time limit for many abortions, if that is removed, then there is certainly a concern that people will seek abortion later or leave it later because it's not seen as a problem beyond 24 weeks.
And what effect would it have on amateur or backstreet abortion?
Well, I think that this is very much up for debate, because if you decriminalise abortion, if there is no legal penalty attached to doing an abortion, then it's hard to see how you could avoid the idea of backstreet abortion, because currently it's illegal to perform an abortion outside of an approved premises, such as a private sector abortion clinic that's regulated by the Care Quality Commission or a hospital. And if there is no criminal sanction attached to that, yes, then there would be regulation for hospitals and clinics to say, if you're registered with the CQC, you must perform abortions, to these certain standards. But I'm not sure what limits there would be to stop a person who is not a registered healthcare professional performing an abortion in a home or somewhere else. I think that would open up a whole new can of worms about how you would prevent that kind of malpractice, and there'd be no criminal sanction attached to it if all you do is remove abortion from the criminal law.
If listeners would like to pray at this time and voice their concerns as well, how can they do that?
Well, I think the next stage really is Parliament. So Diana Johnson MP recently had what's known as a 10-minute rule bill that was proposing the decriminalisation of abortion. And that was passed in Parliament, but it doesn't become law because it's only a brief bill. It's more of a testing of the waters. At the moment, there will be votes. There are votes in Parliament, both within the House of Lords and the House of Commons, for private members' bills. And this means that any MP that scores highly in the vote for private members' bill can choose any subject they want to bring forward as a bill. And the 1967 Abortion Act by Lord David Steele was a private members' bill. And so it's very likely that if a pro-abortion MP or peer scores highly in the ballot in Parliament, then they will be given a ready-made decriminalisation bill in order to put before Parliament in this current session. So I think that's really the next stage of where things go. And you know, there are MPs and peers who would be very concerned about that. And I think if people are praying, they should pray for the votes in the House of Lords and House of Commons, and also the outcomes of that in terms of private members' bills, and for those MPs and peers who will be involved in any debates, that they can put the arguments clearly and compassionately when they come up in Parliament.